Hi everyone, welcome back to the Congressional App Challenge Debugged podcast. I'm your host, Medha, and today we have Yannick Kilcher with us. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing today?
Thank you very much for having me. I'm doing excellent, as always. How are you?
I'm doing amazing, thank you. And to give the listeners a brief background on Yannick, he's the CTO of DeepJudge, a legal tech startup in Zurich, Switzerland. He is the most well-known for his YouTube channel, where he explains AI research papers and discusses current events in the machine learning world. Yannick has a PhD from ETH Zurich and moonlights as a street musician. And so I just want to go straight into it. What is DeepJudge and what inspired you to bring law and tech together?
DeepJudge is a startup that does natural language processing for understanding legal documents. There are in the legal world, there are a lot of documents flying around, and most of them have been written by humans, which is different than in like regular programming, where most of the text and other data has been written by computers. So that's easy for computers to understand, but all the human written stuff, that's kind of hard for computers to understand. So me and three other PhDs from my former lab, we've decided to bring sort of the advances that we've seen in the field of natural language processing and AI in that field to the legal world, because there's a lot of stuff to do. And it's quite interesting because it's very human-centered, yet these humans often do very boring tasks, what they deem to be boring, right? So it is interesting.
That's so interesting. And what kind of background do you have with law and everything? And what kind of motivated you that this was the problem that you wanted to solve?
It's kind of arbitrary. I don't have a legal background necessarily beyond like a basic education from high school. But we've taken this course at university, and it was about building a robot judge. At least that was kind of it's clickbait, right? Yeah. The course title is clickbait, but it was broadly about legal tech. And we did a project there because we needed to collect some education credits. And that worked out pretty well. And yeah, we analyzed the market a little bit and the needs and decided there's something to do. So it's not like that I have like a burning passion for the law or something. I think it's pretty cool. But it's mostly we saw that there's a lot of stuff to do, and we can do some cool things using our technology.
That's so interesting. And what kinds of like breadths have you explored using the technology that you've developed? Like, have there been any milestones that you've reached that you've been like, wow, I can't believe we reached this point when you were actually trying to aim for like a different point? Or how have you pivoted the project based off of new developments?
So we're pretty young. We're just like under half a year old or so. So most of this time has actually been spent sort of developing the core technology, which is broadly speaking what you'd get from if you today looked at the literature of language processing and AI. That's sort of the kinds of technologies that we're using, and also fundraising has been a big part of our initial journey. But mostly I'd say it's in the realm of context-based document understanding. So if you have a document and a piece inside the document, like a sentence or even a single word, you want to understand that piece in the context of what's around it. So whereas traditional methods, let's say a search engine or a grammar checker or anything like this, they would look at like the individual words themselves or maybe small packets of words. These newer technologies, they're able to take the whole context, like the whole document or the whole paragraph around the text into account when they make a decision. That's, for example, why Grammarly is so much better at grammar checking than like Microsoft Word used to be 10 years ago, right? It's like really a difference, and that difference comes from these algorithms that learn.
That's so interesting and great to hear that you've had such a cool development. And so obviously, as you mentioned, you're new to the startup world. And so what have been the biggest difficulties as well as the biggest benefits or the biggest achievements that you've sort of faced when developing a startup and ideating and everything?
Yeah, so I think I've seen a lot of these like of the three worlds for, let's say, my type of people, which are academia, large corporations, and startups. I've seen a little bit into each one, and the startup world has the neat, like, it's really cool that you can have an impact personally. So if the team is 5 or 10 or 20 people, whatever you do yourself actually matters, right? And it significantly changes the output of the team. Whereas in a big corporation, sometimes people feel, like nothing they do really changes the world. They're like a tiny piece in a big machine. So I think that is pretty cool in the startup world. There are things that are not so cool, like you're constantly worrying about going bankrupt, and you're like you're it's very everything's very unsure, right? Everything's very insecure, and you have all these decisions to make, which is cool that you get to make them, but it's also scary because if you make the wrong decisions, eventually you'll go bankrupt, which is what 90% or so of startups do, right? So
Yeah, I mean, that's really nice to hear, and also a sentiment that I've heard a lot, especially, as a junior in undergraduate college, that like you can either feel like a cog in a corporate machine or you can do something of your own, which comes with a lot of insecurity, but also comes with a lot of really great values. And so I wanted to pivot a little bit. You are well known for your YouTube channel. How did you decide that you wanted to get into content creation? And how did you decide that what you wanted to do was, explaining artificial intelligence and like decoding papers and everything and research?
yeah, so on my channel, maybe for people who don't know me, I usually like I have a few different types of videos that I make on my YouTube channel. The most prominent one is where I take a research paper and I explain it for like 30 to 45 minutes. It sounds really boring, and by all accounts, it is, but apparently a lot of people value that kind of explanation instead of reading the paper themselves. So this has been successful, I would say, and I didn't expect it at all. So I got into this at some point during my PhD. I had to read some, let's say, rather obscure papers in a discipline called reinforcement learning, which is, broadly speaking, they were about playing teaching an agent to play games. So teaching a computer to play the game Sobokan, for example, on its own, which is like a little puzzle game on like you have to move boxes around and so on. So I had to read these papers, and I thought multiple things at the same time. I thought, if someone else has to read this paper, maybe I can help them a bit, because they're kind of obscure papers, and there wasn't a lot of information about it. And then another thing was, well, if I have to make a video about the paper, I sort of have to understand it, right? Because otherwise I wouldn't feel comfortable releasing a video where I say, here's what the paper is and here's my opinion about it. And then third, I really realized that there was no content of the type that I made on YouTube. So now if you look, there are many channels doing what I do. I hope, fueled in part by them seeing that what I do actually works. But there was really nothing at that point. There was a lot of beginner material for AI, but there was nothing beyond beginner. So I thought, bridging the gap from you kind of know a little bit to you're really at the forefront of current research. So bridging that gap, there was no material at all. And, you know, I still, like, my hypothesis was still that there's no material because nobody wants it. Like, no one cares. But I didn't in any way. I released a bunch of videos, and I did that for years and before anything really happened. And then at some point, I guess people just started getting interested. And yeah, so I don't know. To answer your question, I got into content creation more or less out of, I don't know, like, I wanted to try making videos. It wasn't a planned or goal-driven or anything like this. I just happened to do something that people liked.
Yeah, I mean, I love that story. I feel like that's the most genuine way of getting started, which is just sharing your passion, which is incredible. So you mentioned you've been doing this for a long time. When did you get started, and like, what kind of sparked you that you wanted to post them for the public and not just for your friends or something like that?
Yeah, I have no idea really. Like, I think my first video, so my I got started, my first video uploads were in like 2017, I think. I joined YouTube way earlier, but my first AI videos were in 20, I think in 2017. And then every now and then a few. I don't really know why I released them to the public, honestly. It's just 'cause that's what you do on YouTube, right? You just kind of, I mean, the motto is broadcast yourself, so yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. So you mentioned you joined YouTube way earlier. Were you making other types of videos before, or was it just a viewer?
Mostly a viewer. I made like one music video on an old channel, which shall be not named. But yeah, I wasn't like an active content creator.
Well, speaking of music, you also are a street musician. Can you talk a little bit about like why you decided to start doing that? What instruments do you play? Like, what do you do? And like, also, how have you combined your love for tech and music? Because I noticed on your channel there were some, music and tech or like AI created music videos. So if you could talk a little bit about that, I'd love to hear.
Sure, I have stage fright, like very bad stage fright, and at the same time I really like the feeling of getting the stage fright and overcoming it. So being a street musician I think is one of the most sort of humbling, intimidating things there is, because you're not really like, no one really asked you to start playing music, right? Most people are kind of annoyed by it. If some musician is somewhere, especially if you're like sitting in a restaurant and then people come up and play music, like I don't do that. Like I don't like that myself. So I try to like be at some place where you could conceivably just easily go away if you didn't like it. But yeah, I just thought that was like really scary. So I have a guitar and I have like a little like a loop pedal so I can play with myself so I don't need friends, and then I have like two other effects. So I'm able to essentially imitate a band. It's if on YouTube if you search like live looping or something, you'll find many people sort of doing that style of music. And you can just play a bunch like of pop songs and so on. And it kind of sounds like, sounds like something. Yeah, so that is mostly like a hobby in my free time. And I've done one video on my YouTube channel where recently there's been this development of AI models that can make images if you give them text. So they can take a piece of text and they can like, it's like they've been trained on a lot of images. They've learned kind of what images look like and what images to given text look like. So they're able to sort of hallucinate a new image to a given piece of text. And sometimes these images are okay images. Sometimes they're kind of surreal. So it's really interesting to look at also the development of this area. And so what I've done is I've written like a song, and I've deliberately written the song such that the lyrics it contains would be words or objects that the neural network that I was using to generate images would recognize. So that network was trained on a specific data set. So I used specifically lyrics from that data set. So the song is called Be My Weasel. And Weasel is one of the classes in the data set, right? And then I just asked the network to essentially produce images synchronous to the song that I play. And I think it turned out quite well, though I have to say these models, they have improved so much since then. And that was like a year ago or half a year ago even. But even since then, it's amazing. So if, I don't know, if people search on Twitter for like AI generated art or AI generated images, what you see nowadays is just mind-blowing.
That's incredible to hear, and definitely an interesting song, as well as very cool that you play the guitar and are actively using your love for music to try to get over your fear of stage fright, as well as kind of empower yourself. I love to hear that. I wanted to ask a little bit about AI as well. And so, how do you see like the applications of artificial intelligence, as well as its limitations? And what do you think some of the potential ethical or legal implications could be based off of these limitations?
Yeah, there's like four PhD theses hidden in that question. Yeah, obviously I'm not gonna do it justice right here, right? But the applications of AI nowadays are super broad. There is a sort of latest generation in AI, and that latest generation comes in the form of what we call neural networks or deep neural networks, also called deep learning. And those models tend to be very good at what you broadly call perception. So, vision, like recognizing things from images or video, speech, like recognizing things from sound. What else? Like any sort where you as a human would sort of use your intuition or your kind of instinctive understanding of something, right? You can't really tell how you recognize there's a cat on an image. You just kind of know, right? And it's the same with images or with understanding text. That is also a big part, or generating text. And then even such things like, you know, playing chess. So if you ask a chess grandmaster why they did a certain move, they'll be saying like, yeah, it just kind of felt right, right? Because sure, they calculate ahead, like, I don't know how many steps, but beyond that, they just kind of feel, they just sort of use their intuition. So in any of these things where people just kind of use their intuition, that is where this latest generation, it's about less than 10 years old, that is really picked up, has really advanced a lot. So the applications of that are manifold, but certainly we've seen applications in like the medical domain, radiology, for example, or also pathology. So analyzing like cuts, I don't know what you call that in English, like slices of tissue under a microscope, or analyzing X-rays, anything like this, has been really advanced by these models. Any sort of, like, imagine a garbage sorting facility, right? That would recognize garbage and then sort out the garbage automatically. Anything like this has become essentially supercharged. And then, you know, the applications of AI are so broad, it's almost hard to talk about where today AI isn't used. All the recommender systems, the reason why TikTok knows exactly what you want to watch is because it learns, right? It learns from you and from people like you. It knows exactly, ah, you're like this other person, and they are these other people like, I don't know, videos about cute dogs, so I'm gonna serve you the same. The risks, or sorry, the limitations of AI are also very plentiful. And there is a bit of a war, disagreement going on in the AI community about how far we can go with the current approach. The current approach is to build these learning systems. Some people say that we're kind of at the end. We're just kind of, making them a little better over time. Other people argue we can reach sort of general intelligence with this approach. So I don't know. I don't know who's right. I guess we'll see. For now, the AIs, they have trouble, I would say, living in the real world, if you consider that. Like, they will understand the data you teach them, but they won't understand anything beyond that. So if you don't teach them about something, they'll have a hard time, right? If they don't know that, when the sun is up, there it's also bright outside, they won't know if you've never taught them these. So a lot of these kind of real world facts, living in the real world, something that would be obvious to you as a human, these machines, they have trouble because they don't live in the real world. They live purely in the data we give them. And as for, I think, consequences, you asked about legal and ethical consequences. So the legal consequences are also, this is a super interesting field, right? For example, right, if an AI creates an invention, we've just had the first patent granted to where the inventor is an AI. This has been granted in, I believe, South Africa and Australia have granted it. The US has declined it. But it really is it's the first patent where the inventor is not a human. It's an AI system. The owner of the patent is still a human, but the inventor isn't. And so you get all these questions like, okay, if an AI invents something, who does it belong to? Do the AIs have rights in themselves? If AI creates art, is that creative? Is it creativity? Does intellectual property, copyright apply? It's like, that there's I have no idea how to solve any of these things, but we get into all of these kinds of troubles. And on the other side, you can also think about regulating AI, right? So we also know that if you let these things run rampant, they might do something you don't want to, right? I think there's a lot of discussion about the algorithms, by which people usually sort of mean how Twitter and Facebook and YouTube serve you content, right? And what they amplify and what they don't amplify. So you also get these issues there. Do you want to regulate that to sort of give a balanced view of accounts or not, or yada yada. And the ethical consequences again are also plentiful, though I think that the ethical consequences come mostly from the application. So it, for example, comes from the fact that Facebook is a giant, essentially monopoly. Google is a giant, essentially a monopoly. And if they implement something, it affects almost everyone on the planet, right? So it's not like you have the option easily to switch away from using Google. I guess you have, but what are you in it? But or even more centralized things. And so if an AI system, for example, has been trained on a biased data set, on the wrong kind of data set, or hasn't really gone through quality control well enough, then there's a danger that people will be impacted by this unfairly. And quality control is one of the big issues we have in AI, because in a classic program, I can look at the code and I can sort of know what it does. There are complicated programs where, looking at the code, yeah, but in AI, there's no code to look at. There's just, well, it's a system, it has learned. What can it do? I don't know. Let's sort of poke it a bit and see. That's all we can do, essentially.
Yeah, that's so interesting and such a good and in-depth take. So thank you so much for that. Finally, I wanted to ask you, since you've had a PhD, you're obviously heavily involved in research, And our audience is primarily middle and high school students. What kind of advice would you give to younger individuals who are interested in research but just don't know how to begin with ideating a research question or don't even know how to get involved with trying to start with research at all?
Well, if you're thinking about these things in high school, you're sort of ahead of the pack already. I didn't know these things until I started my PhD. So there's nothing to be rushed, I think. Nowadays, it is easier than ever to find information online, like to get to know about a topic. There's a lot of, with YouTube and so on, there's a lot of good information. There's a lot of kind of crap information. There's a lot of people trying to sell you things. But in general, it is quite easy if you want to go out, look for information, teach yourself things. And if you're interested, information is plentiful. Communities are also plentiful. So there are a lot of supportive communities on like online, be that in Discord, Discord servers, be that in I don't on like Reddit or anywhere where people congregate. There are people that really like to help, and some people, they're kind of kind of dicks, but there are a lot of good people. So I don't know, I'd say get out there, and especially if you're into like AI and so on. I think one of the most valuable things is to just learn to code, like learn to program a computer. It is like a superpower. Like it is so valuable. I think, well, I don't want to say everyone should learn it in high school because some people just don't just hate it, right? But it is such a valuable skill that most likely, if you know how to code, you will want to do it day and night, in your free time for work. You'll just have so many ideas of things to do. It's incredible, and you'll be able to just create things out of nothing, and that is amazing, including AI programs. Sorry.
Yeah, thank you for that great advice, and I 100% agree with you that learning how to code is one of the biggest and easiest ways to kind of get involved in, especially in research. But since we've come at time, I just wanted to ask, are there any last words before you leave us, or anywhere that you think listeners could check you out if they were interested in learning a little bit more about you and some of the projects you're involved in?
Well, I guess if you search my name is pretty unique. So I think if you search it, I'll come up. So if you want to learn more, that's that. No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us. And now I'll pop it over to our next segment.
Hi everyone, I'm Meryl, and welcome to another installment of the Pop Culture Bite, where we'll bring you the latest buzz in the intersection between tech and current pop culture trends. Let's start off with the game that's been taking the world by storm, Wordle, the daily game that's got English lovers and haters alike brushing up their five-letter vocabulary. The game was actually released last October, but was recently bought by the New York Times as it grew in popularity. Now, the answer trends on Twitter almost every day as players around the world rush to figure out the word in six tries. Some Twitter users are drumming up a storm about the game's difficulty now that the ownership has changed. The New York Times maintains the list of possible words hasn't actually been modified. Either way, it's a perfect way to have some friendly competition with friends, if sharing your daily scores is your thing. Some YouTubers have even come up with ways to game the system and use information theory to figure out the best opening guess. YouTuber Grant Sanderson, also known as 3Blue1Brown, initially deduced that crane was the best opener, but later amended his algorithm with an update that replaced that with Saleh. Either way, don't let that stop you from having fun with the game and using your own guesses. My personal favorites are Irate and Adieu. Now, for those of you who want to maybe reduce the hours you spend scrolling on Instagram to actually get some work done, a relatable struggle, bad news. The company's made that just a little bit harder. After the app faced disappointing usage numbers in the recent business quarter, the app's time limit settings for users stopped offering 10 and 15 minutes as an option. Now, the least amount of time the app will remind you to leave after is 30 minutes, with the suggested option being 3 hours. Of course, that's not to say you can't set your own timers. iOS offers app limit options as well. But it just goes to show that spending time on Instagram is, well, exactly what the company wants. Let's move on to art. If you've ever experimented with creating art with artificial intelligence, you'll be interested to know that the US Copyright Office recently ruled that art created by an AI can't be copyrighted. According to The Verge, the board decided that since there isn't enough human authorship, art created solely by an AI isn't eligible for copyright protections, from the ruling on Stephen Thaler's Creativity Machine. It's the same reasoning that stopped work by animals, yes, animals, and divine beings from being copyrighted. This is a fairly significant decision concerning the rise in AI art creating platforms and expression, like making portraits on artbreeder.com or trading cards with the Wombo Dream app. However, art created with an AI component that still requires creative work done by a human can still be copyrighted, and none of this stops anyone from exploring the creative process through these AI platforms and using them to create your own art. Sometimes it's just fun to play around and see what you can create with AI. It's more artistic than you might expect. Well, that's all the time we have for today's Pop Culture Bite. I hope you enjoyed it and got a healthy dose on what's been trending for the last couple of weeks. We'll see you back here soon. Back to you, Mira.
And that's that. Thanks so much to our tech news expert. And thank you so much to our tech fans and listeners. This has been the Congressional App Challenge Debugged Podcast. Be sure to check us out on all podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to hit up our social medias, check out the Congressional App Challenge on Twitter and Instagram. I'm your host, Mehta Gupta, signing off. Thanks for listening. Bye.